It is 26 minutes past the hour. It's a Transcended Tuesday, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don, a member of the Board of Creation Moments. He's a biochemist with years, even decades of experience in pharmaceuticals. But something, well, if you've listened to Don with us over the years, and there have been lots of them, you'll know that he is an Old Testament scholar. Now, he may say, no, because he's a modest guy. But he's one of the best teachers of Genesis I've ever encountered. But today, we move to the book of Daniel. This is another favorite spot in the Old Testament for Dr. Don. So, Don, let's talk about the book of Daniel. Now, I just read that he didn't author the book, but it was written by an unknown author. And you have other thoughts on that?
Well, yes, I would argue against that, because whoever wrote it, and I believe Daniel probably wrote the bulk of it, except for one chapter. One chapter in the book of Daniel was actually written by King Nebuchadnezzar. And so, it's in my opinion, it's one of the most amazing books in the Bible because of the prophecies in it. And it is a book that contains all of Gentile history. Can you imagine that?
Wait a second. All of Gentile history.
Yes.
Does that go back to Genesis? How old is Gentile history?
Well, I mean, not so from Daniel time onward, obviously. I mean, the history to Daniel was written in Chronicles and Judges and those type of things. So we got that history in Genesis, of course. But from King Nebuchadnezzar forward, all of the Gentile history is encapsulated in Daniel.
Meaning the Babylonians.
Well, the Babylonian history.
They would have been considered Gentile, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Babylonians, the Greek, the Roman, even the 400 years silent, what we call silent years after Micah.
Wait a minute. I'm catching up with you. You're talking about the visions, the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar, aren't you?
All of the visions and everything that the Lord downloaded to Daniel in the latter chapters of the book. And we know that chapters 1 through 6 are pretty much historical chapters. And then you get to chapter 7. In chapters 1 through 6, well, actually chapters 1 through 7 are written in Aramaic. Then 8 through 12, through the end of the book, are in Hebrew.
Does this mean we have ancient manuscripts?
The book of Daniel?
Yeah, you said if it was written in Aramaic, how do we know?
Because of the what has been passed down through the ages, that it has been preserved as to what was the original work or the original work
of
Daniel.
Okay, so news about the book of Daniel, because Aramaic comes from a combination, as I understand it, of Hebrew and the Babylonian language.
Yes, the Babylonian language obviously was being used. Now, if we get into the book, and then hopefully we can get through the first chapter today, not that I'm going to read the whole chapter or anything like that, but we need to understand where Israel was at the time of the Babylonian captivity. And the first chapter pretty much does that for us, as well as Jeremiah and Ezekiel, because Jeremiah is warning Israel and the Israel kings that, look, Israel is going to be captured. And Jeremiah is telling the king, as well as Ezekiel, is telling the king, don't resist. Don't resist being captured. That didn't work out too well because the king resisted. Nebuchadnezzar comes along, and there is a first siege, if you will, on Jerusalem. And Jehoiakim, who was the king of Israel and Jerusalem at that time. He was released by King Nebuchadnezzar and put up as a vassal king. In other words, Nebuchadnezzar told him, look, this is what I want you to do. Keep these people in line and we'll be fine. But at the same time during that first siege by King Nebuchadnezzar. So King Nebuchadnezzar came and pretty much took over the countryside, and Jehoiakim was put as the vassal king. King Nebuchadnezzar plundered the temple and took the treasures from the temple, brought it to Babylon into his museum, and therein it stayed for a while, for a long while, actually. At the first siege of Jerusalem, he took hostages. And, of course, we know of four boys that he took. Now, when he took these boys, they were about 12 to 15 years old. And then the most famous, of course, we're talking about his book, which is Daniel. But we had Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. That's their
Babylonian names. Nebuchadnezzar had particular plans for these four, didn't he?
Well, and others. The way King Nebuchadnezzar operated was that he would take the best of the best, and he would look for unblemished kids and youth that he could train in the Babylonian ways to then be potentially his wise advisors and help basically rule over the land he just conquered. So Daniel and these three boys that we learn a lot about, they were taken along with others, but they kind of stood out. So they were put into a training program. And now we get into chapter one of Daniel. But before we get into that, that first siege on Jerusalem started the servitude of the nation. So a lot of folks were taken from Israel. The best were reserved for the training camp, a three-year training program. And the rest served as basically servants to the Babylonian people. And so that was the first siege, and it's that 70-year period from that first siege is called the servitude of the nation. Then we get into the second siege. Jehoiakim pretty much ignores Jeremiah's counsel, that is, don't rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. And instead of doing that, there's a five-year battle that Jehoiakim pretty much engages the Babylonians, loses, and as a matter of fact, loses his life. And so his son, Jeconiah, is now ruling over Babylon. And until the siege is over, and there was a blood curse then put on Jehoiakim's family, including Jeconiah.
And you said ruling over Babylon, you meant ruling over Jerusalem.
Yeah, ruling over Jerusalem mm-hmm. and over Israel. Jehoiakim is captured along with 10. Now, the second siege, so the first siege, you get the prime of the prime from Israel being taken to Babylon. And then in the second siege, 10,000 captives, including Ezekiel, went into captivity. And his uncle is installed as the vassal king. During this period of time, both Jeremiah, and you can read the whole book of Jeremiah is all about warning of what is to come. And God, through Jeremiah, is telling them that they've been bad, they haven't been following the statutes and commandments of the Lord, and so this is going to happen, don't resist Ezekiel. There's sections in Ezekiel that are basically saying the same thing, and the false prophets in Israel kind of prevail against them, and hence you get the opposition through these kings. So that takes us through the second siege, and then the third siege is the final siege on Israel and Jerusalem. And Zephaniah ignores Jeremiah and Ezekiel's warning and yields to the false prophets and rebels yet again. And then King Nebuchadnezzar gets so upset with these crazy people that there is a total siege now of Jerusalem, results in the complete destruction of the temple and the city. So Solomon's temple is completely destroyed. One of the wonders of the world, Solomon's temple was. Zedekiah angered Nebuchadnezzar so much that he kind of flattens the city and destroys it. So after that, we have what's called the desolation of Jerusalem. And that becomes important because of one of the prophecies in Daniel chapter 9. We need to know that particular date, which we do historically know exactly when that siege took place. 70 years after that starts the desolation. Jerusalem begins with this final siege. So not all of the Israelites are taken into Babylon, but a good portion of them now are taken into Babylon, and their servants and some are in the command. And
just
King
for a quick idea of the geography, there's about 900 miles between Babylon and Jerusalem.
Yeah, it's a distance. It's a distance because we're talking about Jerusalem. You got to go kind of around and come pretty much all the way down the Euphrates River, and Babylon is pretty far south down on the east side of the river. So it was a journey.
And you can't travel straight across because it's desert. You would not survive the trip. So you follow the river, right?
Right. You follow. And that was pretty much a route that people came and then went through Damascus and up and around and then down through the Euphrates River. So that then brings us into Babylon. And now the story begins for our four friends in particular.
Don, how many years between the first and the third siege?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question.
Because Nebuchadnezzar is still reigning there. It's not yet his son by the time of the third siege. And since Daniel and his three compatriots were taken in the first siege, then they were in a training program for 3 years. They would have been matured probably from that first siege period and almost grown men by the time of the third siege.
Yes, I don't have that particular data. I'm sure it is available. I don't have it in my notes as to how many years passed between them two, but it couldn't have been too long. Maybe 10 years, maybe less.
Because the 70 years of captivity dates from the first siege, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That is the servitude of the nation of Israel, and the 70 years starts at the first siege, mm-hmm. and then it continues. And why is that important? It's important because Israel did not keep the Sabbath year for 490 years. Now, what is the Sabbath year? It is the seventh year. So Israel was told way back in the beginning, and you can find this in Leviticus and you can find it in Deuteronomy, that 6 years you grow crops, you tend them, but on the seventh year, you let the land lay fallow. And that was a principle to allow the land to recuperate from all the farming that they had done the previous 6 years. And it's just a good principle to kind of live by. But the Israelites ignored it for 490 years. Well, you know, 7 divided into 490 gives you 70 years. And so the Lord said, you owe me 70 years. This land has to stay fallow for 70 years.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so everything that God does is for a reason.
But that number 490 has significance later on as well, doesn't it?
Well, it does. It will come about as we'll see in, you know, the later chapters of Daniel. But the 490 years, Israel was getting worse in straying away from God. And by the time the first siege on Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, things were out of control. And Jeremiah, the weeping prophet, saw how far off things had gotten. And the priests were corrupt, and pretty much the judges over the people were corrupt, and they had false prophets, and Israel was told to stone false prophets. If you prophesy something and it doesn't come true, you were to be stoned, because that's not coming from God.
Is this the point? Now, we know that Jeremiah escaped to Egypt, along with a number of the priesthood. Would that have been at the time of the third siege, probably? That was the last gasp of Jerusalem before utter destruction.
Yes, and Ezekiel, Ezekiel certainly went into captivity, mm-hmm. and Jeremiah probably did it well. The priest pretty much had Jeremiah imprisoned because he was talking against them and warning the people as well as the king and the priest about the siege that was coming, and don't resist being captured because this is God's plan and you don't want to be going against God. And of course, the prophets, the false prophets in Israel were telling him, no, that's not true. We're going to win this battle. And of course, they didn't win the battle. So those false prophets became even falser, if you will. Mm-hmm. So if we look at the key players now in going forward in Daniel, or of course, obviously Daniel, and the name Daniel, by the way, means God is my judge. So Dan is judge and El is God. So God is my judge. His name was changed to Belteshazzar, which means Prince of Bel. Well, this is an ungodly world over in Babylon, and they worshiped Satan and the sun gods and all kinds of false gods. And so they changed these young men's names. Hannah, which means beloved of the Lord, was changed to Shadrach, which means illumined by the sun god. Hmm. Now, can you imagine? I mean, how did Hannah feel about that? I mean, yeah.
He was ticked, I'll bet you.
Yeah, he was not, these are the names that they were given. Mishael, who is as God, that's what his name means, was, of course, his name was changed to Meshach, who is like unto the moon god. So it's close, but again, it's pagan god. And Azariah, the Lord is my help, was changed to Nabennego, which is servant of Nego, a shining fire. And basically servant of Lucifer. How would you like that name? And so these are the young men. And the first chapter talks about this episode that the training commander, if you will. So these four boys are in training for 3 years. And they're first given the king's food because the king wants these guys to be smart and wants them to be strong and wants them to develop in wisdom of the Babylonian wisdom. And so they're going to learn Babylonian. They're going to learn their language plus the sciences and the arts and presumably the black magic, which these four boys don't learn. But they're in a special group. And so the king assigns a daily portion of the king's food that the king ate, which was wine as well as meats. And Daniel speaks up and says, we can't eat this. We can't drink the wine. We can't eat this. And so the chief of the eunuchs, after he gives names to these boys.
It would be fair to say it was not kosher, right?
The problem with the meat is that, so Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food and with the wine that he drank. That's verse 8. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And the other three boys went along with this plan. Now, this was a big problem for the eunuch who was in charge of all of these folks, because he basically feared the king, because if these four boys wound up being weaker and not as robust as the other boys, then the king would basically have his head and might burn him plus his whole family. So you did what the king said. And Daniel said, well, look, let's just give this a test. Let's just test this for 10 days. Give us vegetables and presumably nuts or among that. And then we'll see after 10 days who's the stronger and the wiser. And so they did that. It's amazing that it only took 10 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these boys, after 10 days, I'm trying to find the scripture here. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in the flesh than all of the youth who ate the king's food. So the stewards took away the king's food and the wine that they had drunk and gave them vegetables, and presumably water is what they were drinking. So Daniel's diet was much better than the king's diet.
Well, I think there's another hand in all this. God was overseeing this process as well.
Of course he was overseeing it. And Daniel, being a righteous young boy and righteous young man at the time, didn't want to defile himself. Now, the problem with the meat, I mean, some of the meat he probably could have eaten because they were used to goats and lamb meat. That wasn't necessarily the issue. The issue was that this meat that the king and the head eunuch was giving them was already sacrificed to idols. And therein lies the problem.
Uh-huh.
And so these young Jewish boys could not eat food sacrificed to idols because the Lord commanded them not to eat the food sacrificed to idols. Mm-hmm. And so they were going to obey God more than they were going to obey man. That just shows you some of the righteousness of Daniel and these three boys, that they were following God regardless of their environment and regardless of them possibly being punished and taken away from this special privilege that the king had given them because of their unblemished appearance and intelligence. And so they then are put into this training program at the latter part of chapter 1. So the king now is going to test these boys to see how they're doing. How did they do in our training program here? I want to find the cream of the crop. And so he's speaking to all the boys that were in the training program, not just Daniel, Meshach, and Abednego. He's speaking to all of them, and he finds among all of them, the four of them stood out from the rest. So these four, eating vegetables, drinking water, stood out amongst the rest, and none was found like the four. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians, not musicians, the magicians and enchanters.
Well, probably the musicians too, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That were all in his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus.
That's a powerful ending. Cyrus was the Persian king who brought Babylon to its knees.
That's exactly right. Wow. And that will be for a story yet to come. But there we have it. That's the first chapter in Daniel. Why study Daniel, the book of Daniel? Because it has the greatest prophecy in all of the Bible, really. Is in the book of Daniel, as well as all of the, as I said before, all of the Gentile history from the time of King Nebuchadnezzar onward.
And that number 490 will appear again, won't it?
Yes.
Dr. Don, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website. This is fascinating. This will be continued hopefully next week. Don will be available. So, creationmoments.com is the website. They have scientific information just stockpiled there, archived, that supports the biblical story of creation. And I think you'll enjoy a visit there and come away, knowing a lot more than you know now, probably. Creationmoments.com is the website. Don, we appreciate what you bring us every week. Looking forward to next week and the continuation of Daniel.
All right. Well, next week, we're going to talk about the King Nebuchadnezzar statue.
All right. Prophecy. A little more apocalyptic next week. So, Don, have a good week.
Okay.
Forward to it. All right. See you then. Bye-bye.
Very good. All righty. So long.